This is Tuesday, the 21st day of March, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, President Trump's nominee to be Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court is underway. It's somewhat contentious.
There are many Democrats who believe that, in essence, Republicans stole a Supreme Court seat from Democrats.
Also ahead, the U.S. prepares to open an international symposium on ways to battle ISIS. We'll talk with VOA's Cindy Sain about that. And you'll hear about another international conference that has no international attendees. All on today's International Edition. We begin International Edition with more hearings in the U.S. Congress. President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, federal appellate judge Neil Gorsuch, is facing questioning from a sharply divided Senate panel on the second day of his confirmation hearing. VOA's Michael Bowman has been covering the hearings here in Washington. Michael, what were some of the highlights of this morning's proceedings?
Ira, we saw this morning Senate Democrats really trying to drill down into what Neil Gorsuch believes, what he doesn't believe, as far as cases that have already been decided, such as Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion in the United States, and also perhaps pending matters that could come before the court, such as an amendment or an attempt to change Roe versus Wade, or questions of corporate interests, or questions of religious freedom. These were areas where President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, a federal appellate judge, very much refused to say how he might rule in any pending case, in any litigation that may come up before the court, as is the tradition of all nominees for the Supreme Court, and in fact all judicial nominees. None of them want to tip their hand as to how they may rule, and they all maintain that they will be an objective and independent thinker when they are placed on the court. And Neil Gorsuch very much held true to that conviction, I suspect to the consternation of Democrats who are really trying to get a sense of just how conservative a justice President Trump has nominated.
There is a political background to this, and for those unaware, can you kind of fill people in?
Absolutely. If confirmed to the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch would replace Antonin Scalia, who was an arch-conservative on the high court, one of the strongest conservative voices. He died in February of last year during President Barack Obama's final year in office, and President Obama nominated a different appellate court judge by the name of Merrick Garland, who was widely regarded as a moderate, as a judicial moderate, but Senate Republicans argued that no high court seat should be filled during the heat of an election year, during the heat of a presidential campaign, and that therefore, since they held the majority in the Senate and they could decide whether hearings would be held or not on Merrick Garland, they declined to hold hearings at all and essentially kept the seat vacant right up until the present day. And Democrats, to a person in the Senate, say that while indeed Neil Gorsuch is entitled to the very same consideration currently that Republicans denied to Merrick Garland, that the past is not forgotten. There are many Democrats who believe that, in essence, Republicans stole a Supreme Court seat from Democrats that a Democratic president would have been able to fill, but for the refusal of Senate Republicans to allow a hearing to go forward. There are very raw emotions on this question right up to the present day.
And how long are these hearings scheduled for? And I guess there's an afternoon session today. And then how much longer before a possible vote?
Well, Ira, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, a Republican by the name of Chuck Grassley, expressed a hope that this would all be wrapped up so that he could get to bed on time tomorrow night at 9 p.m. This elicited some chuckles. Look, we get Supreme Court nominees every so often, and this is for a lifetime position that can truly shape the very fabric of American society and of our democracy. These are weighty committee decisions, senators regularly go over the time limits when it comes to their question and answer periods. We have been going strong for about 4 hours, and only about half of the Senate Judiciary Committee has been able to ask their questions of Judge Gorsuch. And this is only the first round of questioning. There will be subsequent rounds. This could stretch on easily into the wee hours of Wednesday, or even be extended into Thursday if the process drags on.
Well, not only Chuck Grassley, but Michael Bowman doesn't get much sleep then either. Isn't that correct?
These are exciting times, but truly, to see this process in open committee, where very pressing and fundamental questions about judicial philosophy and the role of the judiciary in our system, it's just fascinating to watch, Ira.
Michael Bowman is VOA's congressional correspondent. Michael, thanks so much, and drink a lot of coffee.
Always a pleasure.
Michael Bowman. Let's move our attention now to a cabinet member, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He'll be hosting the first full meeting since 2014 of foreign ministers and senior officials from the 68 countries and international organizations that are part of the U.S.-led coalition to fight Islamic State. State Department says the goal of the conference Wednesday is to accelerate international efforts to defeat ISIS in the remaining areas it holds in Iraq and Syria and maximize pressure on its branches, affiliates, and networks. VOA Cindy Sain joins us now from the State Department. Cindy, why haven't all these countries met in so long?
Well, that's a good question, Ira, and the new Trump administration is saying it's high time that they did get together. And Secretary of State Tillerson has been criticized for being a little, having too low of a profile, being not in the spotlight enough. So he is stepping firmly into the spotlight this week, as you said, hosting 68 countries, the NATO foreign ministers, and all the ministers of this very broad worldwide coalition to discuss the strategy to fight the so-called Islamic State. And the State Department is saying this is a critical juncture as the coalition is seeing some successes on the battlefield.
First of all, it's an opportunity in the new administration to assess where we're at and what we want to do going forward. I don't want to steal any thunder from the Secretary, but I think he will come with new ideas and new approaches and a new way of looking at how to defeat ISIS.
And, Cindy, that, as you know, was Mark Toner, the State Department spokesman, talking about this conference that gets underway tomorrow. Cindy?
Because some experts so far are saying the new Trump policy against ISIS looks a lot like the Obama administration policy. So we'll have to see what new ideas may be coming.
So what do you think the focus is on this? Obviously, it is fighting and doing something to eradicate ISIS, but geographically, other ways, where do you see this going?
Well, I'm hearing that it's not primarily a fundraising meeting, but that Secretary Tillerson and the U.S. may be asking some allies like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to contribute more to this burden sharing. And, of course, a lot of money is going to be needed once the fighting can ever finally be stopped to help reconstruction in war-ravaged Syria. So I'm hearing that sort of to reaffirm and also maybe step up a financial commitment from some of the members, because President Trump has said that the U.S. does not want to be pouring millions of dollars into the Middle East.
What about Russia?
Well, yes, Russia is notable by its absence. It is not part of the coalition, and most experts say that Russia has been more focused on keeping Syrian President Assad in power than doing anything to really seriously fight against Islamic State terrorists. So Russia will not be there.
So far, the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, has been somewhat subdued as far as his public footprint is concerned. You think this is going to change with this conference?
Well, I think this is a good opportunity for him. And some experts that I spoke to, including Michael Hanlon from Brookings, agrees this is a good opportunity.
If there are any fresh policy ideas, all the better, but it's not even necessary. It's not even obligatory for that in a first session, because people need to get to know each other as well. And, of course, Rex Tillerson, Donald Trump, these are not people who are all that well known to the broader foreign policy or national security community, certainly not at a personal level.
You think, Cindy, that anything is going to happen as far as specific action is concerned, or is it just, as you mentioned, the U.S. asking for more money to move forward with this objective?
Well, we're really not sure, Ira. You know, there's been a lot of interest. Is the U.S. going to be sending more troops in, and how many more? And the analysts I spoke to said there are some of the partners are not very happy with the situation as it is right now.
That is Cindy Sain, VOA State Department correspondent. Cindy, thanks so much for being with us. And you, of course, will be covering the story, and you'll be covering it for us. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
That is Cindy Sain. Let's move into see what's going on. What's hot? What are people discussing in social media? Andrew Palchevsky is here, as he always is with that. What's trending?
Well, this hashtag electronics ban, the announcement by the Trump administration that they're going to ban any electronics on flights larger than a cell phone. So anything like a tablet or a laptop can't be carried in the cabin, has to be checked from 10 Muslim-majority cities, flights from there to the U.S. This is kicking off kind of chaos, not just in airports as people are trying to figure out things, but on social media. You have a lot of the airlines trying to use social media to communicate this information to people before they get ready to board their flights. You have the Department of Homeland Security putting out guidance through their Twitter channel. And then you have people who are just confused about this, talking about this, citing statistics saying that checking electronics doesn't really improve security, wondering about all these electronics that are going to be checked in the cargo hold of a plane, if there's potential for problems to arise with that. And then on a more practical level, people with children who keep them occupied with iPads or Kindles or what have you, and people who work and do maybe some business work on laptops in flight, they're not very happy about this.
Well, what do we know or what are we learning or what are you reading about as far as the reason behind this? Obviously, there was some kind of threat that nobody's talking about.
Well, that's another topic of speculation, whether it's a threat, whether it has to do with a broader ban like we've seen with the immigration ban. There's a lot of back and forth about that. It hasn't been entirely clear. What is clear, though, is that it does seem to be broader than just the United States. The United Kingdom has also poised to enact this ban. They've announced that. So
you know what happened the last time they did that, right? There was an increase in thefts from baggage, because everybody knew that laptops and other electronics were being packed in there, and it shot upward as far as thefts were concerned of luggage.
And that's what we're going to see as this plays out. We're going to see more concerns about that. This is similar to kind of the bag check requirements that many U.S. airlines put in place as far as the size of bags or things like liquids caused a lot of people to check their bags, and thefts did occur as a result of that. So now with electronics being in there and knowing that electronics are in there, people are indeed concerned about that.
Anything being said maybe from people in airports about, you said there was confusion and some reports of that, but what's trending as far as that's concerned?
It's just chaos is the word. I've seen that word used in more than one social media post. This doesn't seem to be have been rolled out very considerately for travelers. And that is something that people are picking up on. They're saying this may be an urgent threat, and that's why this was rolled out so quickly.
Anything else trending?
Yeah, we've talked all this week about Russia and hacking and all of these issues up on the Hill. They've been testifying about this. Well, there's an investigation underway into what they call bots. Now, these are kind of programs that spit out social media posts rapid fire. And investigating these Russian bots that were flooding social media with pro-Trump content during different points of the campaign, especially when Donald Trump was facing negative media coverage. Now, much of this pro-Trump content came from conservative sites like Breitbart and InfoWars, and there's some people speculating there's a connection between Russia and these sites.
It's just speculation. There's no proof, right?
It is just speculation. In fact, a lot of people are pointing out that this is something that both the Republicans and the Democrats have done in the past. They've used bots and they've used these tactics to get their information out. So it may not be that Russia is partnering with these conservative sites. It might just be that they happen to be using them, and that's the content they happen to be pushing out.
Andrew Palchevsky joins us all the time, every day, and tells us all about social media. How do people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
And how about me, so I can get in touch with myself?
I can find you at VOA Melman.
Andrew Palczewski with us on International Edition. Among the top stories, President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee says during Senate confirmation hearings that he would continue to fully embrace the concept of judicial independence if he's appointed to the nation's highest court. The Transportation Security Agency issued an emergency order Tuesday banning passengers from carrying large electronic devices on planes flying directly to the United States from 10 Middle Eastern airports. The U.S. State Department confirmed Tuesday that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will not attend the NATO summit in Brussels this April. He will, however, be traveling to Italy and Russia the same month for a meeting of the G7. And a car bomb has killed at least 23 people and wounded 45 more in Baghdad's southwestern Amil neighborhood, according to Iraqi officials. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists recently were able to gain new insight into the evolution of planet formation by creating and studying a model of a fairly young solar system 300 light years from Earth. The nearly 13 million year old planetary system circles a star known as HD 106906. The system features a surrounding planet forming debris disk and one giant planet that orbits it from a distance that is at least 650 times as far as Earth is to the Sun. The planet, discovered by an international team of scientists in 2014, is thought to have a mass that's 11 times greater than Jupiter and takes 1,500 years to make one complete solar orbit. The scientists created a model of the system that examined the gravitational influence the planet would have on the structure of that debris disk. The model suggests that the solitary planet likely formed outside the disk rather than inside the disk and moving out to its current location. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And this is International Edition from the Voice of America. U.S. President Donald Trump's older daughter Ivanka now has her own office in the West Wing of the White House, and she'll have access to classified information even though she's not a government employee. Ivanka Trump will not have an official title but must abide by the ethics rules that apply to government workers, according to her attorney. This is VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Thanks for joining us on International Edition. The University of Southern California each year hosts the African Economic and Development Summit, bringing delegations of African business leaders, government officials, and others to network with their counterparts in the United States. However, this year, the African Summit has no Africans. Michelle Quinn.
The African Economic Summit is usually an opportunity for people to network and talk about trade between the U.S. and Africa. But not many people are here this year, says event organizer Mary Flowers.
Usually we get about 40% that get rejected, but the others come. This year it was 100%, every delegation. And it was sad to see because these people were so disheartened of what happened.
This is the fourth year Flowers has put on this African Trade and Development event. But U.S. embassies in African countries denied attendees visas. About 100 people by her estimation. The countries affected included Sierra Leone, Guinea, Ghana, Nigeria, Ethiopia, and South Africa.
These kinds of things happen that makes it very difficult and challenging for us to connect.
Flowers doesn't know why all of the Africans heading to her event were denied visas this year, but she suspects it has something to do with the broader visa and travel controversy under President Trump. She has appealed to current and former lawmakers, including former Congresswoman Diane Watson.
There are ambassadors that were scheduled to be here at this summit that were denied visas. They rejected their visas. As you know, under the current administration, they are limiting the number of people who come from the continent of Africa into America, and they're denying the visas.
Watson says she has called the State Department to ask for information, but the State Department isn't allowed to discuss individual visa cases. There have been reports of U.S. embassies worldwide denying more travel visas. But it's hard to know for sure. The available State Department data only goes up to last fall.
I have to say that most of us feel that it is a discrimination issue with the African nations because we experience over and over and over. And the people that are being rejected are people that are legitimate business people with ties to the continent.
People were hoping to do business here, but not much has happened. And organizers vow to get to the bottom of it. For Voice of America at the University of Southern California, this is Michelle Quinn.
That's going to wrap up this program. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our man at the controls, Dan Crafton. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Starting in Tokyo, his first trip to Asia as Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson stressed that the U.S.-Japan alliance remains the cornerstone of stability in Northeast Asia and the Asia-Pacific. Japan and the United States have deep economic ties, said Secretary Tillerson, and will keep working together to sustain and strengthen a relationship that is fair for both of our countries. We will work with Japan on shared regional and global objectives, including strong security cooperation within the U.S.-Japan alliance, affirming a rules-based approach to maritime governance, and deepening American, Japanese, and South Korean trilateral cooperation in the face of North Korea's dangerous and unlawful nuclear and ballistic missile programs. The longstanding U.S.-Japan alliance is devoted to peace, prosperity, and freedom in the Asia-Pacific region. While the security environment in this region can be challenging, said Secretary Tillerson, the United States is committed to strengthening our role, and we welcome an increased Japanese commitment to their roles and responsibilities in our alliance. The U.S. affirmed that Article 5 of the 1960 U.S.-Japan Treaty of Mutual Cooperation and Security covers the Senkaku Islands. We oppose any unilateral action that seeks to undermine Japan's administration of the Senkakus, said Secretary Tillerson. Expanding U.S. trilateral cooperation with Japan and the Republic of Korea remains a priority, as it will allow the three nations to coordinate actions on major regional and global problems and more effectively counter the threats posed by North Korea. The United States, said Secretary Tillerson, intends to continue its coordination in regard to the implementation of UN Security Council Resolutions 2270 and 2231, which imposed robust and comprehensive sanctions on North Korea to inhibit its campaign to develop operational nuclear and missile capabilities. Both the ROK and the United States have been quite clear over these 20 years that we seek nothing but a stable Korean peninsula and an economically prosperous Korean peninsula, said Secretary Tillerson. With this in mind, the United States calls on North Korea to abandon its nuclear and ballistic missile programs and refrain from any further provocations. The U.S. commitment to the defense of Japan and its other treaty allies through the full range of our military capabilities, said Mr. Tillerson, is unwavering.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.